This is VOA News. I'm Michael Brown. Three House panels have requested documents related to U.S. President Donald Trump's personal lawyers' interactions with Ukrainian officials. The AP's Mike Gracia has more on the story.
The House Intelligence, Foreign Affairs, and Oversight and Reform Committees have subpoenaed President Donald Trump's personal attorney, Rudy Giuliani, for documents about his dealings with Ukrainian officials. The panels also requested information from three Giuliani associates. The subpoenas are part of the impeachment investigation, prompted by a whistleblower complaint saying Trump tried to pressure the president of Ukraine to investigate the son of Democrat Joe Biden during a phone call in July. According to the complaint, in the days after the call, Giuliani repeatedly communicated with advisors for Ukraine's president. Mike Gracia, Washington.
North Korea said Monday that tensions remain high with the United States and little has been done to achieve diplomatically a year after the historic summit between the adversaries. Meantime, former U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton said the military must remain an option in resolving matters with North Korea.
If you believe, and you may not, that it is unacceptable for North Korea to have nuclear weapons, at some point, military force has to be an option.
Bolton, who was fired by Trump earlier in September due to policy differences, was speaking to an audience at the Washington-based Center for Strategic and International Studies. Talks between the U.S. and North Korea broke down after a second summit in February between Kim and Trump ended without a deal. As always, for details on much more news, we invite you to join us at our website. That is voanews.com or on the VOA mobile app. From here in Washington, this is VOA News. Security sources say al-Shabaab militants launched an attack on an airbase used by the U.S. military supporting Somali forces. AP correspondent Mike Hempen reports.
A Somali official says a suicide car bomber detonated a vehicle packed with explosives at the gate of a military airstrip that serves as a base for U.S. and Somali forces. A security official with the Lower Shabelle Regional Administration says after the bombing, gunfire was heard across the base, suggesting the base was being attacked. The Islamic extremist rebels, al-Shabaab, have claimed responsibility. The U.S. military uses the airstrip to train Somali troops and as a base to launch drones that attack al-Shabaab. I'm Mike Hempen.
A Somali government statement said no U.S. or Somali forces were injured in the attack. The U.S. Africa Command conducted two airstrikes and used small arms fire to target the militants, killing 10 of them. The New York Times is reporting President Trump pushed Australia's prime minister to help discredit Special Counsel Robert Mueller's Russia investigation. The Times reported Monday that during a recent telephone call, Trump asked Prime Minister Scott Morrison to help U.S. Attorney General William Barr collect information for a Justice Department probe into Mueller's investigation. The paper said the FBI investigations into Russian interference began as a result of information given to the FBI by Australian officials. Barr recently began a review of the Russian investigation. Mueller's nearly two-year investigation found that the Trump campaign did not conspire with Russia to affect the outcome of the race, but he reached no conclusion on whether Trump should be charged with obstruction of justice for instances in which he may have tried to sidetrack Mueller's probe. Protesters chanted pro-democracy slogans while marching through Hong Kong Tuesday as the government hosted a ceremony marking the 70th anniversary of the People's Republic of China. There was a brief scuffle with police and reportedly some arrests made. Hong Kong police warned of the potential for protesters in the semi-autonomous Chinese territory to engage in violence during this week's National Day events. Hong Kong has experienced a cycle of protests since June over a now-shelved extradition bill, which has escalated into an anti-China movement. And Jesse Norman, the Grammy Award-winning international opera star, has died. Norman passed away Monday in New York at age 74. The family said in a statement the funeral arrangements will be announced in the coming days. For details on more news, please join us at voanews.com or the VOA mobile app. From here in Washington, I'm Michael Brown, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte, Washington. Today is Tuesday, October the 1st, and here are some of the stories we are covering. There are calls for Nigeria Chief of Army Staff to resign.
Our position has been clear that the president and the commander-in-chief is incompetent. He cannot fulfill the primary responsibility of governor. And we are begging the Supreme Court to use the opportunity to solve this problem once and for all.
A Gambian police chief confesses to lying to the country's Truth and Reconciliation Commission. A South Sudan court convicts 9 for armed robberies and other crimes. Impoverished Malawian women trade sex for fish. And Cameroon's government opens a week-long national dialogue on the crisis in the country's English-speaking region, but without the separatists.
We were invited as individuals. And by the way, we do not consider that a dialogue. We consider it a monologue because it doesn't meet the standards prescribed by the international community.
Chris Anu is a spokesman for the Cameroon separatist movement, and Burkina Faso authorities crack down on sugary drinks to fight obesity. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Nigerian Chief of Army Staff Lieutenant General Tukur Buratai has come under criticism for calling on religious groups to come to what he calls the forefront of the spiritual battle against terrorism and extremism. At a spiritual warfare seminar in the capital Abuja on Monday, the Army Chief said religious groups need to help in the fight against ideologies, which he said lead to the formation of extremist groups such as Boko Haram. But the Coalition of United Opposition Political Parties, known as CUPP, says the Army Chief of Staff should be fired or forced to resign because of his pronouncement.
These things are becoming big joke. This is 59 years of Nigeria's existence. And look at the kind of stories you are hearing from the Chief of Army Staff. The primary responsibility of government under Section 14 is protection of life and property. Any government that cannot fulfill that responsibility is useless. And mark my word, is useless, because that is your only duty. It is your only duty to the people who are paying you money and keeping you in office. So the Chief of Army Staff has reconfirmed once again that he's incompetent for the job and that he's playing with people's life. Likewise, his boss. The only thing they need to do is to step aside for people that have the capacity to get the job done. And to us in the opposition, our position has been clear that the president and the commander-in-chief is incompetent. He cannot fulfill the primary responsibility of governor. And we are begging the Supreme Court to use the opportunity of the litigation over the 2019 general election to solve this problem once and for all.
Supporters of the government are saying that this is yet another attempt by the opposition CUPP to stay relevant. This is just mere politics, they say, and that the Chief of Army Staff was making a suggestion at a religious gathering. So if they need a spiritual support, what is wrong with that?
He has the army religious unit. He should go there and appeal to them. So those ones will be offering prayers for him. The point is that the man does not know how to solve the challenging situation facing the country. For over 2-3 years, they have been learning on the job. He cannot do it. So what else does the president want to happen before he will remove the Chief of Army Staff? And that's what we're saying. Apart from removing these people, we need a criminal inquiry into how over $2 billion that have been given to them have been spent in the last 2-3 years. We need to check their bank accounts. We need to check their houses. We need to check the way they are living to be able to track this money and recover it.
But if you say President Muhammad Buhari should fire the Army Chiefs of Staff because they have not been able to carry out his instructions to protect life and property, why are you asking that President Muhammad Buhari should be removed? He was just elected for his second term, which was confirmed by an elections tribunal, by the way, after the challenge by former Vice President Atiku Abubakar, who represented your party.
I don't want to discuss about the judgment of the people with due respect to them. We're challenging it in the Supreme Court. Everybody knows that was turning the law upside down. That's what they did. The point I'm trying to tell you, presidential governance is a job. You are called to do it. You are paid heavily for it. If they feed you, they buy boxers and pants and trousers for you in it. So you need to do the job. If you cannot do it, you step aside. So the president has lived his destiny upon which he was elected, which is to protect life and property. And then the Chief of Army Staff cannot even perform, because even the man who hired him doesn't even have the capacity to perform. All of them are on the same boat. If they have honor, they should have left. They should have ordinary Brazil. It's the man, not the people we are forced out, not even a serious security issue. But here, you have somewhere that thousands and hundreds of thousands are being killed every year. He's still in power, promising people that he will improve with people's lives that is being lost day by day. So the best thing to do is for the president to step aside. But he has no honor. So I know he's not going to step aside. That's why we're appealing to the Supreme Court to consider not only the law this time around, but the national interest. That it is in the interest of the nation that President Muhammad Buhari is chased out of governance.
Ugo Chinhere is the spokesperson for the Nigerian Opposition Coalition of United Political Parties. He spoke with VOA's Peter Clote from the capital, Abuja. Cameroon on Monday opened a national dialogue to seek solutions to the conflict in the country's English-speaking regions where separatists have declared an independent Ambazonia Republic. Prime Minister Joseph Dion Ngute, chair of the dialogue, called on about 1,000 delegates to come up with suggestions that would make Cameroon one country. But separatist spokesman Chris Anun says the so-called dialogue will not succeed for a number of reasons, including the fact that it does not meet the standards prescribed by the international community.
The Federal Republic of Ambazonia interim government wasn't invited. We were invited as individuals, and we thought it wasn't necessary for us as individuals to show up there. And by the way, going by this organization, we do not consider that a dialogue. We consider it a monologue because it doesn't meet the standards prescribed by the international community.
What do you mean standard?
Because you do not be a party to the conflict, then call for dialogue and you are there free. We need a dialogue, a negotiation that has a neutral mediator. Mr. Bier called for dialogue and he is a player and a referee at the same time. We do not accept that. We need an international mediator and a dialogue or negotiation that takes place in a neutral location, not in Yaounde, not even in Ambazonia.
What do you make of the prime minister who chaired the dialogue saying to the delegates that their responsibility is to come up with proposals that will make Cameroon a better place to live for everyone?
The problem with the prime minister is that none of them have recognized the real root causes to this conflict. Now, I listened to the prime minister, and the prime minister said this conflict was started by the teachers and the lawyers. And then he stopped saying that it is a language problem. No, the problem in Cameroon is the problem of annexation and recolonization. And unless they get down to this, this problem will not be solved tomorrow until they recognize, they identify the real root causes to the conflict.
Chris, I hope you understand that if the government had invited you as a group, the Ambazonia, instead of individually, I hope you understand that then the government will be admitting that it agrees to the separation of Cameroon.
Well, the government has no choice but to admit that there are two Cameroons. There is the Southern Cameroon and there is Ambazonia, the Southern Cameroon. They are aware that from the beginning there were two anthems representing those two states. They understand up to today there are international boundaries on the ground identifying those two states. So if they think they cannot identify up today, they are making a mistake that really marking time to get to the real problem.
You said earlier that you were invited individually, but you could have still go. Was there another reason why you did not go?
Absolutely, quite a couple of them. Number one, again, there are no international mediators. Number two, international community has said you want to hold a dialogue. Let that dialogue be inclusive and look into the root causes of the problem. Also, the matter of security for us, if we were to attend, let me tell you something that many people are not aware. One of us who attended the Swiss initiative in Switzerland last week went back to Cameroon, was picked up in Yaounde. As we speak, he is locked up in a dreaded National Gendarmerie in Yaounde. And you think we are going to believe that you have security for us?
Chris Anu is the Secretary of State for Communication of the self-proclaimed Ambazonia Separatist Movement of Cameroon. He was speaking with us from the U.S. city of Houston in Texas. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, October 1st. Daybreak Africa time is now 14 and a half minutes past the hour. A Gambian police chief on Monday confessed to lying to the country's Truth, Reconciliation and Reparations Commission. Assistant Police Commissioner Gorgui Moub confessed to lying about the role he played in quelling a student demonstration back in April of 2000 under the then military leader Yahya Jammeh's rule. Pandere Mbaye reports from Raleigh, North Carolina.
Council, I think I have said that the previous testimony that I gave to the Force Commission was a lie, but it was a makeup story and it was out of intimidation. I'm sorry for misleading the commission.
Police Commissioner Gorgui Mboub has confessed to lying to a commission of inquiry that was set up during Dictator Yahya Jammeh's rule and the recently formed TRRC. Mboub is the commander of Gambia's anti-police crime unit force. He had served the force for over 30 years. It was back in April of 2000 when Mboub was accused of taking part in quelling a student demonstration, which led to the massacre of 14 students, including the killing of journalist Pa Omar Barrow. Dozens of students were also brutally injured with gunshot wounds. Mboub had claimed that he was coached by his superiors at the police to lie to the previous commission that was set up under Jammeh's rule to investigate the student killings. Mboub and his core security colleagues were later granted amnesty by Dictator Jammeh. They were indemnified from prosecution. Mboub explains what he was told by his boss before his year 2000 commission appearance.
If you go to the commission and then you mention anybody's name, you are in trouble. Go there and try to fabricate a story. Honorable Counsel, I am telling you the whole fact. Go and fabricate a story, but do not mention anybody's name. Jaiso was there, he was there, and this was the Deputy Inspector General of Police. So if I would have mentioned their names, it would be of detriment to me.
Mboub repeated the same lying pattern during his Monday appearance at the TRRC. While answering questions from Lead Counsel Elsa Fall, the police chief confessed to lying to the commission about his testimony on the St. Augustine High School incident. He had initially denied illegally entering the school where he opened fire at students. He also assaulted the physical education teacher.
You gave a statement to the commission of inquiry, didn't you?
I do.
And you gave them a false story.
Yes, that one is a false story.
So you have lied twice about this, didn't you?
I can confirm lying once.
And you lied to our investigators.
Okay, sir.
You agree you lied?
Yes, sir.
So you lied twice?
Yes, sir.
Dr. Lamin Cisse is the chairman of Gambia's TRRC.
Before I turn to the commissioners, you can just clarify one small point you made in your testimony. You had said that when you were told by your colleagues that you shouldn't name names, they said to you, don't do it. If you do it, they would witch hunt you. What does that mean?
I know at that present time, if I should have come to the commission and call anyone's name before I reach the headquarters back, I will find my dismissal letter waiting for me. That is obvious.
Mboub has promised to live by the TRRC's never again mantra. He called on his colleagues to avoid executing illegal orders. For VOA Daybreak Africa, this is Pandere Mbaye reporting from Raleigh, North Carolina.
A military court in South Sudan's capital, Juba, has sentenced 9 men to prison, including members of the National Security Service and 2 police officers. All 9 were convicted of armed robbery and other serious crimes. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports from Juba.
It is so done.
29-year-old Army Private Arol Manyon Akol, who served on the National Security Service, was found guilty of robbing motorists at gunpoint. Presiding Judge Major General Marshal Stephen Babanen sentenced Akol to life in prison.
First accused person, Private Arol Manyon Akol, is dismissed from National Security Service active list, deprived from being paid due post-retirement pension or any after-service gratuities, if any. The convicted person is sentenced to life imprisonment with effect from the date of his arrest as from 23rd October 2018, and thereof he shall be sent to Civil Prisons Authority to serve his term of imprisonment.
2 police officers were also found guilty of armed robbery. The presiding judge sentenced Captain William Deng to 3 years in prison and a fine of 150,000 South Sudanese pounds, the equivalent of $600. Lieutenant Kuot Chol Chol was dismissed from the South Sudan National Police Service and sentenced to 3 years in prison. Judge Babanen also sentenced 6 civilians, including 1 Egyptian and a Sudanese national, of up to 10 years in prison. The 6 were also ordered to pay hefty fines and return stolen vehicles to their owners. The convicted civilians include an engineer, a businessman, and an insurance broker. Defense lawyers called the sentences severe for the crimes committed. Speaking in Arabic, defense lawyer Santino Mao says civilians should not have been tried in a military court.
What surprised me is the presence of civilians in our military court, and they are being convicted, but we'll appeal that. This case is tried in a civil court because you cannot try civilians in a military court.
Speaking in Arabic, defense lawyer Chair Rehan Chair says his client, police captain William Deng, is innocent of all charges.
He did not share in the robberies and was never caught in any act. He did not even get any share of the loots. So we are going to appeal to the High Court.
Deputy South Sudan National Police Service spokesman, Colonel James Dark, says the stiff sentences will act as deterrent to all police and national security officers who abuse their position.
This punishment is an example to organized forces that you will not run away from being punished. And it gives us that whatever you do, at the end of the day, you will be apprehended and you will be sentenced.
All of the suspects were arrested about a year ago. Juba residents have been complaining for months about the city's high crime rate, especially nighttime robberies. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
Authorities in the Burkina Faso capital, Ouagadougou, are cracking down on sugary drinks to fight what they say are growing cases of obesity and diabetes. Rabotier Drabigo, the mayor's director of cabinet, spoke to Ricky Stryak about the specific measures that they are putting in place.
They believe that they are asking something good, but they don't know that it is not good at all for their health. And many of these foods are made with sugar. Sugary drinks and cakes and other things. So people are sick, but they don't know that it is because of the food they eat. So it's why we have decided to make them learn that the food they eat is the third reason of the disease.
What exactly is the mayor's plan to combat this epidemic?
The mayor of Ouagadougou has first decided to help people in school to make them know that what is the disease they can't meet when they eat many sugar. He has started to build a place for those who sell food in school and tell them not to sell no more sugary drink, just sell water first. And second, he told them to sell food in very hygienic condition. So he built shelters for them in schools. For this year, we built three shelters for them. And for the year coming, in 2020, he wants to build 20 shelters for school food sellers. This is the first action he did. And then he has decided not to allow people to sell anything around school. And then he has decided to make communication about disease caused by sugary drinks in Ouagadougou.
You're specifically going after sugary drinks. Are you going to increase any taxes on these? Are you going to make them more expensive? Or right now, is it just a public education campaign and the banning of selling the sugary drinks near schools?
Thank you. The mayor cannot increase taxes on sugary drinks. This is the rule of the government to do it. We just can't tell people that namely, which kinds of disease they can meet if they drink many sugary drinks. And we also want to have trainings for people who cooks food in schools and hospitals, so that how to learn them how to prepare food without many salt and sugar, because salt and sugar are the two factors of disease in our country. But we cannot increase taxes on sugary drinks.
That was Robert Tiendribego, the mayor's director of cabinet. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from the Burkina Faso capital, Ouagadougou. Along the shores of Lake Malawi, poverty and food shortages are chronic problems due to declining fish catches in the lake. Women facing hunger or trying to feed their families sometimes resort to having sex with fishermen in order to get something to eat. Lamek Masina has the story from the town of Maguchi.
Women carrying buckets each morning to buy fish at Lake Malawi is a common sight in the Makawa area. A less fortunate sight is many of the women paying for the fish with sex. Cecilia Iman is the secretary of the village beach committee, responsible for taking care of lake resources in the area. She says the practice really happens here. Most fishermen came to the lake with a mission that they will find women right here, but the relationships do not last. They only bring problems to village women. The women are lured into transactional sex when they don't have enough money to buy fish, or when they accept an overture from fishermen, say local officials. She says, for example, one can have 2,000 Malawi kwacha but want to go to the lake to buy some fish, and there one fisherman offers her free fish. Taking into account that she didn't eat last night together with her child, she would end up accepting the offer, which would end into something. The practice has brought a lot of misery to the women. She says if the prevalence of HIV infection is increasing in our area, it is largely because of fishermen. Women are too desperate for fish, and also most of the fishermen are just impregnating the women, then run away, leaving them struggle taking care of babies. Although transactional sex between women and fishermen in Lake Malawi is rampant, stigma and discrimination make it difficult to identify those involved. One villager, Laika Atibu, told VOA she can't allow fishermen to seduce her with the fish. She says, I don't allow that. I try my best to do some piecework to raise money to buy fish because I fear if I do this, I can contract HIV. And if I contract HIV, who can feed my children because I am the only parent to take care of them? Fishermen distance themselves from the matter. Yari Dinkoma says using fish as a rule is tantamount to abuse of women.
He says
we don't do that. If a woman doesn't have enough money to buy fish, we don't ask to do anything with her. Different research shows that sex for fish in Malawi is more common between December and March because it is a period when the country is hard hit with food shortages. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Mangochi, Malawi.
And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of African news. Police in Nigeria have rescued 19 young women from a baby factory operation in the country's largest city, Lagos. Lagos police spokesman Bala Elkana said the victims, ages 15 to 28, were rescued along with four babies. The women were lured to Lagos from all across Nigeria with promises of a job and then imprisoned. A U.S. airstrike in Libya has killed seven Islamic State fighters, according to U.S. Africa Command, AFRICOM. It is the fourth U.S. strike this month against the terror group in the southwestern Libyan town of Manzouk. One airstrike last week killed 17 ISIS militants, and another killed 11, according to AFRICOM. A strike on September 19 killed 8 ISIS militants. And that is it for this Tuesday, October 1st edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barty, wishing you a very good day.
Want to relax, unwind, or charge up? Then listen to Music Time in Africa this weekend. It'll do all that for you and more. Heather Maxwell. I know good music. And Africa is my passion. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for 1 hour of commercial-free Pan-African music of the highest caliber. You get great music, music news, and amazing artist interviews from rising stars to superstars. This listen will take you places. So do it. Join me for Music Time in Africa, your weekend destination.